From earliest childhood, Churchill had been fascinated by war and dreamed of gallantry in battle. "There is no ambition I cherish so keenly," he had confided to his younger brother Jack, "as to gain a reputation for personal courage." As a boy, he had collected a miniature army of 1,500 toy soldiers and spent hours sending them into combat. "From very early youth, I had brooded about soldiers and war, and often I had imagined in dreams and daydreams the sensations attendant upon being for the first time under fire," he wrote. "It seemed to my youthful mind that it must be a thrilling and immense experience to hear the whistle of bullets all around and to play at hazard from moment to moment with death and wounds." At Sandhurst, the Royal Military College from which he had graduated in 1894, Churchill had loved nothing more than to participate in war games, regretting only that it all had to be make-believe. To be an aristocratic Englishman in the late 19th century meant being surrounded not merely by the lavish benefits of imperial power, but by its equally vast responsibilities. Covering more than a fifth of the world's land surface, the British Empire had come to rule about a quarter of the human race, more than 450 million people living on every continent and on the islands of every ocean. It was the largest empire ever known, easily outranking the once mighty Spanish Empire, which had been the original object of the awe-filled description, "the empire on which the sun never sets." It was five times the size of the Roman Empire at its zenith, and its influence over people, language, money, even time, for the clocks in every time zone were set to Greenwich Mean Time, was unrivalled. By the time Churchill reached adulthood, the greatest threat to the empire no longer came from the other major powers, Spain, Portugal, Germany, or France, but from the ever-expanding burden of ruling its own colonies. Although long the object of admiration, envy, and fear, the British army had been stretched impossibly thin as it struggled to keep the empire intact, criss-crossing continents and oceans to put down revolts everywhere from Egypt to Ireland. To Churchill, such far-flung conflicts offered an irresistible opportunity for personal glory and advancement. When he entered the British Army and finally became a soldier, with the real possibility of dying in combat, Churchill's enthusiasm for war did not waver. On the contrary, he had written to his mother that he looked forward to battle not so much in spite of as because of the risks I run. What he wanted most from his life as a soldier was not adventure or even battlefield experience, but a chance to prove himself. He wanted not simply to fight, but to be noticed while fighting. For a member of Churchill's high social class, such bold, unabashed ambition was a novelty, if not an outright scandal. He had been born a British aristocrat, a direct descendant of John Churchill, the first Duke of Marlborough, his parents' personal friends of the Prince of Wales, Queen Victoria's oldest son and heir. Yet in his open pursuit of fame and popular favour, Churchill seemed far less Victorian than Rooseveltian. The immortal Barnum himself had not a greater gift for making himself and his affairs the talk of the world, his first biographer, Alexander Macallum Scott, would write just a few years later. Winston advertises himself as simply and unconsciously as he breathes. In a world in which men were praised not just for their stiff upper lip, but for extreme modesty when it came to their own achievements, Churchill was widely criticised for being that most offensive of creatures, the medal hunter. He was called a self-advertiser, a young whippersnapper, even by a reporter for the Daily Chronicle, Pushful the Younger. He was not unaware of these criticisms, and even years later, bewildered by the viciousness with which he was attacked, would admit that it was melancholy to be forced to record these less amiable aspects of human nature, which by a most curious and indeed unaccountable coincidence have always seemed to present themselves in the wake of my innocent footsteps. He was not, however, about to let them slow him down. Churchill knew that the surest and quickest route to recognition, success, and perhaps, if he was lucky, fame, was a military medal. It was the swift road to promotion and advancement in every arm, he wrote, the glittering gateway to distinction. Distinction, in turn, could be parlayed into political clout, opening a door onto the kind of public life that he longed for, and which he believed was his destiny. So while the military was not, for Churchill, an end in itself, it was certainly a very useful means to an end. What he needed was a battle, a serious battle, one that would be talked about, would be remembered, and, with a good dose of courage and a little showmanship on his part, might propel him to the forefront of the military stage. For that, he was willing to risk anything, even his life.